Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's nice to see everybody. The House Judiciary is convening. In attendance are Representative Holmes, Representative Samuels, Co-Chair Dahlstrom, myself, Rammers, Representative Coghill, Representative Lynn, and our Representative Grunberg will be here in a couple of days. So Chris Jenkins, who is a constituent of yours, is that right,
yes,
Representative Holmes?
Correct.
Is going to enjoy a little civics today. I don't think it's appropriate for you to speak, but you certainly are welcome to see things from this side of the table. We're delighted to have you.
I thought Representative Grunberg had a makeover.
He lost a lot of weight.
He needs a makeover.
I know, you're out of luck.
Okay, and we want to welcome you back, Susan. Thank you very much for looking after us again this year. And in my private capacity, I'm known to say have a cookie, and so we thought this year that we would experiment with baking. And it smells nice.
It does.
And so although we're on a Pillsbury program right now, we've been talking to Ken, who is now with Representative Dahl's office, and he is going to sell me personally dough from the Silver Bow.
Oh.
And we're going to be featuring a Silver Bow cookie dough. And
we're going to be in bigger chairs. Yeah.
This will be the ever-expanding chair.
So we'll be experimenting pending Representative Stoltz's consideration whether we want to stay with chocolate chip or whether it's more appropriate to pursue a snickerdoodle approach for the session or along those lines. For today's consideration, we're joined by our friend Senator Olson, who we're so happy to see, we are going to visit today a work draft for Senate Bill 139. But we have some issues with this. If I recall, Jane, everybody knows Jane Pearson, our committee aide, who took us through last year so exceptionally well. Thank you for that, Jane. This was a bill that went to the House floor, got kicked back to Judiciary. We're going to take it up today, talk about some considerations, and then bring it up to move it back on Wednesday of next week. And this is the only piece of business that's before us today. Nobody came to us with bills for Friday, and so this will be the only meeting that we have this week. And then we anticipate a full schedule beginning next week, and to once again set the tone for being a committee that can carry its workload. If you recollect, other than the two finance committees, House Judiciary, although we were careful of the bills that we passed out of committee, we moved more bills through this committee than any other standing committees in both bodies, with the exception of House and Senate Finance, and which was a record I was quite pleased with, because we want to be able to demonstrate that we can be an efficient committee. So happy to be back here. It's nice to see everybody. I think Senator Olson, are you going to give us an overview of this? And then we have a couple of people online from Department of Transportation, and somebody with the aircraft owners group with us as well. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to be presenting the thrust of the bill, and I have my Deputy Chief of Staff here, David Gray, who's been working intensely on this for the last number of years, and I'd like to invite him up to the office, or up to the table if I could. Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the committee, as we all know, Alaska is one of those states that's very dependent on aviation, and the transportation needs out in rural Alaska, especially, are highlighted by what's going on within the aircraft community. As a pilot and as an air taxi operator with both helicopters and airplanes, one of the things that happens is that, like any man-made object, things fail. Now, I've had a number of engine failures well into the double-digit numbers, and when that happens and everything goes quiet except for the whistle of wind, the only thing that's more terrifying than that is watching those flames lap on the windshield. The last engine failure I had actually had melted metal. So this is one of those things that is very serious because people die from this stuff. And as your engine quits, the thing you want to look out for is someplace to land. And so the thrust that we've been trying to do is go ahead and make sure that we encourage people to build landing strips, airstrips out there for instead of trying to work off the sandbar, or if you're on floats, trying to work off the river. But what happens is that these airports that people make for themselves, for their cabins or for their mine or for other activities that they have out there, there comes a liability because we're all student pilots. Those of us that are pilots, we're all students at one time, and some of us still need recurrency and proficiency all as time goes on. One of the things that we found out was that when you're going out with your instructor and you go into a place that's, you know, a little more remote and you get your off-airport experience, there is that temptation as a young pilot to go out and test those limits. And many times you go into places that aren't regularly maintained airport, aren't long enough, I've got an angle to them, so you're landing uphill one way and landing taking off downhill the other. As long as you have those things in mind as a professional pilot, you can work them. But what happened was that many of the students were going on out there to some of these private airstrips, practicing touch and goes, and unfortunately many times they came back with either bent metal or unfortunately didn't come back at all. And so what we've done, what the effect of that was, it stopped people from making airports or advertising that they did have airports out there. And so then there were legislation put in even before my time here in the legislature to go ahead and try and encourage more of these airports that are out there. There was a bill that came back in 2004, and what it did was the latest revision of that had section B in it that had the provision to go ahead and have a X marked on it, which is in conforming with the federal aviation regulations, which means you have an abandoned airport, which is not the intent of what we want to do. To put an X out there to maintain that X obviously takes time, energy, and effort that many of these people don't want to be put up with that. The other provision that was there was they had to go ahead and register it with the FAA, so they got on the WAC charts, the World Aeronautical Charts, or the sectional charts that were there. And that's, I would say, 99% of the pilots or those people that have have airports out there don't even know how to list them with the FAA. They got to be looked at. They got to be there. It's a very cumbersome issue. And so because of that, there was a thrust to go ahead and make it easier for those private, I say private in a very loose manner because it can define a lot of things, but those non-state maintained airports. And so that's the reason we put this bill in here, to try and clean up the language that was there, because what happened was it came to my attention that a local insurance man in Anchorage who had his own airstrip could not get liability insurance for his airport on his own land. And when an insurance man can't get liability insurance for his own airport, what choice do the rest of us have? And so because of that, we put this legislation in. And with that, I go ahead and anything else you want me to emphasize?
No, maybe through the chair, we did have some difficulty with this bill, and it caused the senator to put in a sponsor substitute, which was, so there's another version floating around, which eliminated totally the whole issue of marking or getting registered in a federal chart, and I think you'll have somebody online to discuss that aspect of it. But last year, when the bill came to the floor, it was obvious that a lot of people didn't quite understand, and it's not easy to understand. And so it was the Senate was glad that it had a chance to come back before you, so that there could be broader understanding of what the bill accomplishes before it goes to the floor again. Thank you.
Before we open this up for questions, I just want to note, in light of the discussions we were having about ethics yesterday morning and this morning, that Senator Olson, who enjoys the capacity of being in the commercial aviation business, this could be perceived as a conflict of interest. That here are the precise subject that you're the most knowledgeable about, somebody could perceive that somehow you would enjoy a benefit about this. And I think it's precisely the slippery slope and some of the absurdity that we dealt with yesterday morning or this morning, depending on which day you went for the ethics hearing, because yesterday I just kind of checked out. Some of the things that we discussed were so far afield from common sense and why most of us come to the legislature and precisely have the ability to speak with considerable knowledge on a variety of subjects with which we have personal life experience. So, Senator, I just want to thank you for bringing this to our attention. And in spite of this paranoia that has overwhelmed the state government, that you still feel comfortable to share your expertise on the subject with us. And with that, I'd open us up for any questions for Senator Olson. Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for you or the Senator, I guess. Are we working now off the sponsor substitute, the /C version of the bill, or just eliminates B? B, both 1 and 2, just eliminate them all?
Representative Samuels, I have a memo. Am I the only one that has this memo?
Yeah, that's
this one. I could go off the record just for just 1 second here. So, Representative Samuels, we are going to adopt the CS, which is version E. Is there a motion? Representative Dawson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the House CS for the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 139-25-LS0792/E.
Without objection, we have version E before us as the working document. Representative Samuels.
Thank you. I guess a question for the Senator, for Dave. I understood eliminating B. I understood the original bill, so maybe I just haven't caught up to you yet.
The original bill /A, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I understood /C, the original, or I guess the original sponsor substitute. All you did is eliminate paragraph B.
Yes.
Right, so that's no longer with us, but I understood that one. That with this one, if you because you just made the statement that a lot of times if you go out into your land and just cut a runway, you know, with a bulldozer, you won't even know to list it as private on the charts. It won't be listed anywhere on the charts. So you're trying to eliminate the liability. So you cut a little Super Cub strip, and some guy comes along as 185, and he crashes as 185, and comes and sues you. If it's not designated private, does the liability still exist under the current language, under the language that we've got before us now?
Mr. Chairman,
the original bill eliminated all of it, and they just said there's no liability except for gross negligence.
Mayor, if you're with this.
As you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Samuels, if you look at the statute it's 096593, where you have the civil liability relating to aircraft, runways, airports, and landing areas, there is an existing statute already, a portion that is there, but as to whether your specific question is there, that's the way it is, and that's the only provision that we have that would go ahead and cover that.
So get this right. You're changing closed to private.
Yes.
So on the charts?
Under subparagraph?
On the sectional, it's going to say under section B, you're going to go from closed to private. What if it doesn't say anything? That's my point. Because I go out and I cut this runway out there, and I get the bulldozer out there, and I cut this runway in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not marked as private because it's probably not marked anywhere because I don't even know. I mean, I know where it is. If it's not marked as private, you're still liable, which I don't think is what you want to do. You want to get away from the liability. That's the way I'm reading it. If I'm reading it wrong, that's fine. But I understood the X part, trying to eliminate the X part. That's
yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that's a section B. Also in that same statute listing, there's a section A, which you don't show there. And that talks about a person who, without compensation, constructs, maintains, repairs an aircraft, runway, et cetera, you know, can enjoy the limited liability. And that's just for that kind of person. the Section B talks, you know, about an owner and operator of an aircraft like that. So there is a somewhat different group there. And in that case, where it specifically talks about an owner, they would have to do the, you know, the marking under original law or can get listing, FAA listing.
Representative, through the chair, Representative Summers, do you understand the answer to the question? I hear your question. I know what your question is, but do you understand the answer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It seems that A and B may not be in conflict, but it's a lawyer's dream. A person without compensation constructs, or a person who owns. What if I didn't own it, but I bought your land from you? Now I'm all of a sudden my liability. I'm into B and not into A, but I do maintain it. So what's the conflict? I mean, in the current, this has nothing to do with your bill, actually.
Sure.
In the current law, though, where would my liability? Am I under A? Am I under B? And then I've got further questions on C. What happens to Kaparik? What if somebody else owns the runway? Let's say Shared Services owns the runway at Kaparik, but the contract is with, I'll give a Pioneer example, with Pioneer Natural Resources. So you do a charter up there for Pioneer, but the runway is owned by, I assume, by Shared Services, by Conoco thing. So the people that contract is not the people that own the runway. They have a separate commercial agreement. And this had nothing to do with your bill, but the language is still confusing to me. The conflicts between A and B, where's the liability? I know where you want to go, and I'm with you. I'm with you. I just want to make sure we all get to the same place. So I don't – I'm still confused on the
– Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuels, the you've got two questions there. One has to do with the 185 accident on the Super Cub runway that somebody just pushes out with a bulldozer.
Correct. Skip the commercial operation for a second. I'll get to that one later. The C question.
You want to go back to the C question,
let's go with the conflict between A and B first. The Super Cub who crashes on your Super Cub strip.
Okay. The 185 that crashes on the Super Cub strip.
Right, exactly.
Okay. That's addressed, as far as I can see, in subsection A of section of Alaska Statute 09-65093.
Pardon me, Senator. Do folks have that? Because you're reading statute.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could continue,
okay.
The language already in statute says that those people that do construct the runway are under the limited liability already. What the intent of the bill is to go ahead and make sure that you didn't have to put the X on there, and that you didn't have to list it as a FAA designated runway in order to be eligible for the limited liability. That's the thrust of the bill.
I'd just like to ask.
Go ahead, Representative Simmons.
If I were wanting to sue somebody, mm-hmm. I would say A does not rule, B rules. And you didn't list the runway as private because you didn't know you had to list the runway as private. And now I'm going to come back and I'm going to sue you. I see the conflict between A and B. B has a certain set of rules that you have to follow, and A just says, no, you can't come and sue unless it's gross negligence. And I don't know how you would decide which one you fall under, whether you maintain and repair or whether you own.
To me, I understand that, and to me, I can see where, you know, I see the answer to it, but there are other people that don't see things the way out from my perspective. And we have Tom George on the line, and maybe he can go ahead and clear it up from that standpoint. He is one of the persons that's going to witness. Maybe he has an answer. Maybe he has an answer in his testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Holmes, do you want to pose your question, or do you want
to? Can I pose my question? And then that way we can address it. Actually, my original question was actually going to be where this conversation went, which is, can we walk through the difference between A and B? But now I've evolved to a new question, which is, I'm looking at the language in front of me now, this new B section in the e-draft, and now I'm thinking that I've got a hypothetical in my head that Ted Stevens International Airport now could fall under B, or a lot of other. I mean, can you just designate something as, I mean, maybe they couldn't, but I'm trying to figure out, I mean, subsection A has an exception to it, which says, unless you're charging for this. Right? Subsection A of this bill says, you know, if you're charging other people, you actually have contracts with people to use your runway, then you're not, you can't get out under limited liability. Mm. And B said, well, if you're really, your runway's actually closed, then you have limited liability. But the subsection B isn't subject to this subsection C exception. I feel like I'm going around in circles. I'm not sure if people are going to follow me. But now that we changed that from closed to private, it seems like, I'm probably wrong on the Ted Stevens example, the international airport example, but couldn't you have a really quite active runway and just mark it as private, really actually be running charter services out of there? Really, you should be falling under this exception. But that doesn't apply to subsection B. It only applies to subsection A. Subsection A says except provided in C. Subsection B does not say except as provided in C. I'm just wanting to make sure that we aren't having people who are running actual businesses who really should have some duty to take care of the people since they're actually charging people to use their field. It's one thing if you go and you cut your own personal runway out in the middle of nowhere and you don't expect people to be using it, somebody lands on your runway, I'm sympathetic to this. You shouldn't be held to a high standard when you just got this runway you're using, maybe your buddies are using it. But if you're actually running charter services, I just want to make sure we're not letting people off the hook who are charging people to use their runways and really should owe a slightly higher duty to maintain them because people are paying to use it. That's my concern.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Okay.
Through the chair, I must say that looking at the record on the previous efforts of this committee with Jim Holmes' bill, was that the subsection C was specifically, added in this committee to take care of those situations where Red Dog Mine is a private mine, but why should they have limited liability, or some of the cannery operations or oil field service operations. This did not really come to our attention to what we were trying, but if there is a problem with the subsection C, this may be something the committee wants to revisit. But that was the purpose of that, as I read the record.
Senator or Dave, could you just succinctly state what the intent of the bill is? Because somebody is not aviation-centric nor an attorney. I'm having a hard time just following what the intent is. I assume it's the Curtis Green example, which is somebody who has an airstrip, can't get liability insurance for their private airstrip.
The original, Mr. Chairman, the original intent of limited liability was to encourage people to build airstrips out there because you want any improvement is better than anything. I mean, I've landed on places where, you have to clear the rocks out in order to take back off again or fill in the holes because you're afraid of knocking off a landing gear for squirrel holes or something like that. That was the original intent of the original statute. The statute was there, though, and it was modified back in 2004 and had these, I call them cumbersome listings that were there, which made it hard for people then to go ahead and get liability insurance, where before they were liable, but you could get insurance on it. Now, because of the confusing language and some of the issues that were there, they couldn't even get insurance for that. And so this is what this bill is to do, is to try and make it so that private Joe Blow that has a mine out there that doesn't fly, for example, and he's just trying to get groceries and fuel in so he can operate his mine for the summer or have his fishing place there for the summer, is not going to get sued by somebody that comes out there and decides to go ahead and become their own self-proclaimed bush pilot. And you are correct that the intent of the bill is the insurance agent's nightmare that we've put them into.
I recall, Representative Samuels, when we were on the Resource Committee, we had a bill about people going across your private property to get access, and we tried to remove that liability because you had a greater risk if you put a keep out sign than if you didn't have a keep out sign. And so I gather that this original language was put in place to facilitate people building more airstrips, but when the language was put in, it muddied the intent of the bill so much so that now it makes it more difficult for a private landowner to get liability insurance for a private airstrip that somebody else may use, and if somebody else uses it and has an accident, it's unclear, according to Representative Holmes, whether or not that person can find you liable. And so we're trying to remove that, but then we're wrapped around the axle of what language
yes.
properly removes that. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an idea of something now that I've thought about it for a few more minutes, and I want to run it by it. Does not necessarily address Representative Samuel's concern, which may require some rewriting of C or some consideration of C. But in my view, now that we're sort of changing the intent of B, which is not just to say you've closed the runway, you're actually using it. In my view, if we took the same language out of subsection A that says except as provided in C of this section and added it to B as well, so that sections A and B would parallel in that, and then it would be, you know, if it would apply to the people we're talking about, people who are just maintaining it for their own use, for maybe their friends' uses, for emergency use, but it wouldn't necessarily apply if you're actually renting out your airstrip to people and passengers.
Representative Holmes, were we going to do amendments today, then your recommendation would be to amend Section B to begin with except as provided in C, and then to go on with the language in Section B.
Yes, that would be correct.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, one other suggestion I might have is that have subsection C dependent on subsection B as well to answer her question, essentially was what she's saying.
I'm sorry, say that last part again, you lost me.
Mr. Chairman, have subsection C, where it says the immunity for civil liability under A, also add B into there.
Oh, I see. Right.
To answer.
Okay. Would that clear up some of these concerns, Representative Samuels? Is that clarifies some of these issues for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would get down to the crux of it, and I don't need an answer this very second, is the difference between construction, maintains, and repairs and the operator of.
Where are you referring?
In A, it says, without compensation, constructs, maintains, or repairs, and in Section B says, a person who is the operator of, and what's the difference between somebody who does constructs, maintains, and repairs, and somebody who is the operator of?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
A person that constructs, maintains, can just go in there with a bulldozer one time and be a contractor, for example, if you walk a cat in, but then an operator is somebody that'd be like the mine owner that's out there or has something where he doesn't even fly himself, but he's got that ground leased or he's got that area. I'm thinking of Richard Foster in particular, where he is very familiar with this kind of stuff and has had of course, he's been an air taxi operator as well, but he's had an airport on his, and all mines have, that are out in the bush have got some kind of airport on them to get in and out.
Okay, can we go to, we have two people with us. Is Roger here or on the phone? Roger?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Are you, you want to add some testimony? Would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Roger Maggard. I'm with the Department of Transportation Public Facilities, Division of Statewide Aviation. I'm the Airport Development Manager. I really don't have any testimony to provide. I'm really here just to answer any questions you might ask of me, I guess.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And how about Tom George with the Aircraft Owners? Tom, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any initial testimony, or do you want to answer any questions that have been posed this afternoon?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, just as by way of background, I serve as the Alaska representative of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Our organization has over 413,000 members nationally and about 4,200 members that live in the state of Alaska. in addition to the airports that are operated by the Department of Transportation, there are many other runways, airstrips, and landing areas, as Senator Olson has represented already. And these are very important to us, not only from the safety aspect, but they also provide access to public lands. They provide reliever space to the municipally operated and state-operated airports. So they are very important. The statute, of course, is intended to put some limits on civil liability for people who are willing to support these facilities, either on public or private land. We worked with the legislature 4 years ago to improve this statute, which passed with overwhelming support at that time. And while there were improvements made, the language in this one section, the Section B, has led to confusion. I've certainly had calls from some of my members saying, well, I've read this, and it looks like I have to close my airport in order to get liability protection, and that certainly was not the intent of this. I dug a little deeper, and as near as I can tell, the original intent of Section B was that a lot of these airports, especially mining strips, things like that, are very seasonal in nature, and so the concern is, well, what about what happens to them when there is nobody there to maintain them? And the thought was then if you X the runway and if you had it listed in the publications, then that exemption from liability would protect you. But it turns out the reality is you can't just switch airports on and off, at least with the FAA. Their charting cycle is a little faster than a glacier, but not much. And so this really was an unworkable way to go about it. Now, the trouble in looking at, of course, we've been through a couple iterations of this, that I'm looking at the work draft slash E. As I read it, again, this does address owners and operators, but it says that you would, to get be exempt, you have to list or chart as private. The FAA doesn't even guarantee that they will chart an airstrip as private. They will chart public use airports. They'll only chart private use airports if there's room on the chart. So we kind of have a provision here that to get this protection, you'd have to do something which the FAA may not be willing to do for you. I think in terms of how to solve this problem, where the Sections A and Section B seem to have this split between people that maintain, repair, and construct versus those that own and operate, would be just to strike the entire Section B, which, like I say, is confusing and contorted, and add owner-operator to the Section A, because I believe the intent is kind of a Good Samaritan law, is to say that people who are operating their airports without compensation, they're out running a business here, should be exempt. And we could clean this up, I think, if that Section A was enhanced and we got rid of the Section B portion altogether.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Olson?
Then we're back to the original bill, Mr. Chairman. I'm not making light of what his suggestion is, but we seem to be going in a bit of a circle here. We would have to, I think what Mr. George is saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. George, but to enhance Section A, we would have to take a majority of what's in Section B without number one and number two. Is that correct?
Mr. George?
Well, through the chair, I mean, I think all we're talking about is really saying adding the word owner or owner and operator to Section A. So it might read a person who, without compensation, owns, operates, constructs, maintains, et cetera. And that way it'd be very clear, as the question that the Representative Samuels raised, that Section A, I mean, we only have one section now to deal with, and we're not inviting lawyers and others to split this and argue with, well, which section are you covered under, or are you covered at all?
Senator Olson?
If that fits the concerns of the committee, that's fine with me.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. I was going to say the same thing, if you could take that first sentence in there. That way, because I agree with you, listing private on a sectional, if it doesn't get in there, then you have to go back on the feds if somebody grasses, and that just eliminates it. So if you own and operate this runway and it's not for commercial purposes, and I can probably live with the language and see that if you own and operate this runway, you're not liable unless it's gross negligence, period.
Thank you. Representative Holmes, does that make sense to you? Does it narrow the concerns?
I believe that does.
All right. Since it was not our intent to move this bill today, I think that if we're together on this, we actually could go off the record for 15 or 20 minutes and just get real crystal clear on this language, and then actually come back on the record and offer an amendment today and move this bill. I feel pretty comfortable about this, but I'd like to have a few minutes off the record to kind of get the language comported, because we're going to do away with C. So now,
no.
Well, I'm sorry. We're gonna do away with except as provided in C, and that will be because C will become
B.
There are just some conceptual issues. So I think I'm going to call an at ease for a few minutes and just get square with what we're doing, and then we'll go back on the record just try and move this. So with that, we're going to take an at ease.
Appreciate that.
It's 10 minutes of two for the committee's benefit. Our guest today wrote me a note. Chairman Ramirez, Chris, how old are you?
15.
15. Our 15-year-old guest today wrote me a note that says, Chairman Ramirez, this topic is something I show or have particular interest in because I'm a current flight student.
Right.
What is the purpose of this meeting? Are we trying to get this out of this committee? Chris Jenkins, so your remarks are quite appropriate.
Very good. We are trying.
We're impressed.
Great job.
Yep.
Okay, with that, we're back on the record. Senator Olson, thank you for your patience. Representative Holmes, do you have an amendment that satisfies the concerns of the sponsor and the committee?
I believe so. I'll make it a conceptual amendment if that's okay with you. Just
Susan, are you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We would add a new section to the bill that would amend subsection A of 09.65.093.
We're not adding a new section.
Sorry?
We're not adding a section.
We're not adding a new section. Okay. All right. We'd like to add the words to subsection A. After the word compensation, we would add the word owns, comma, operates, comma. And then we would delete all of subsection B.
Right, and it's a conceptual amendment, but it would change then, except as provided in, would C would become the new B, is that correct?
Oh, sorry, so yes. C would become the new B.
Renumber accordingly.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yep. All right, is that the extent of the amendment?
I believe it is.
Susan, do you have that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Excellent. Is there an objection to conceptual amendment number one? I'll object for just the purposes of a discussion. Is there any...
Chairman, could I hear from the sponsor as to the what his thoughts are?
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a very good amendment. It seems to go ahead and do exactly what it should have been, the language that should have been there in the first place. But before I go ahead and stamp my black approval on it, I would like to have a comment by Mr. George to make sure that he is aware of what we're doing, and as well as confirms that it does exactly what we want it to do.
Thank you, Senator. Tom, are you with us? Does this take care of the concerns?
Yes, I am, and this sounds great. Now, from anything I can see, this should resolve the confusion and provide the coverage for everybody now.
Okay, very good. Senator?
I just want to thank Representative Holmes for an excellent way to go ahead and facilitate this and expedite its continued process.
Okay, if there are other comments from the committee? All right, with that, I will remove my objection to conceptual amendment number one. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask that we move the House CS for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 139, version E, with conceptual amendment number one. And individual recommendations.
Okay, seeing no objection, Senate Bill 139 moves from committees. Thank you very much, Senator. Pleasure to see you. And thanks very much for helping. And with that, at 5 minutes of two, we are adjourned.